You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin was arrested Friday, charged with third-degree murder of George Floyd, a black man who died after Chauvin pinned his neck with his knee for 8 minutes and 46 seconds. Chauvin was also charged with second-degree manslaughter. How do you feel about the criminal charges? Have you attended a protest? Are police relations fraught where you live? What could be done? What could be done to restore trust in officers who live and work in your community? We're at 800-642-1234. Andrew Smith is police chief of Green Bay. Chief Smith, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me.
And Benjamin Bliven is the police chief of Wausau. Chief Bliven, welcome to you.
Good morning, Kate.
Well, let's start with you, Chief Bliven. In recent days, you posted a message that basically said, "I do not understand what appears to be a lack of concern for human life." What upset you about what you saw through the video of George Floyd?
Well, a lot of things, Kate. I love the policing profession. I love our country. I love my community. And what I saw in that video is against everything that I stand for in this profession, everything that our nation represents. And, you know, the murder of George Floyd is something that our country cannot forget and needs to be impetus for change, not just in the policing profession, but in regards to the institutional racism in our country.
Chief Smith, what was your reaction to the video?
I had a real visceral reaction to it. You know, I was literally felt sick thinking about this man being killed, being murdered right there in front of everybody on live video. And then I started thinking about him and his family, and then I started thinking about how this is going to impact law enforcement across the country, make our lives much more difficult and obviously much more dangerous.
And Chief Bliven, in your post, you've made commitments to the law enforcement profession and your community. What are those commitments?
Well, I think these are commitments that that we've had here in Wausau for a number of years now. But certainly, first and foremost, is hearing and listening to every minority group in our community. It's our responsibility as law enforcement. If we believe that we are good people and that we have the interest of our community at heart, then we need to make those connections and inroads into our minority communities. So they believe that and they see that too, and that we hear them and we can work with them to make our community a better place. In addition, you know, looking inwardly at our law enforcement agency, we have to look at our law enforcement hiring practices to make sure that our police department represents the minority community that we have, so that when, you know, a Hmong person or a black person or a Hispanic person looks at the pictures of the police officers on our card, that they see somebody that looks like them, because that's important. It's important for our community to know that that we believe in our minority communities, and we need to look at training that supports equality, and we have to make sure that we're hiring people of good character who want to make the community a better place and treat people with kindness and compassion they deserve.
Chief Smith, how important is it that officers are a reflection of the community that they serve in?
I think it's critical. You know, I think we learned that in Los Angeles back in the 80s, that if you don't have a department that represents the community, it starts to feel like an occupying army. And I think that's exactly what we were in South Los Angeles during the 80s. I think everybody looked at us as an occupying army, and probably we felt like we were an occupying army ourselves as police officers.
And you worked for the LAPD for 27 years, and this was when Rodney King was beaten by police there. What did that incident teach you about the use of police force?
I think it taught me that we have to change the way we do business as a profession. I think the years leading up to the Rodney King incident, as I said, we felt like we were an occupying army. It was us versus them. There was very little community participation in what we did or how we did our jobs. And I think we alienated a huge swath of the community in that town. And it showed when the riots happened in 1992 that we were really not connected with the community at all.
How long did it take for you to see incremental changes in being more connected, more receptive to the community?
It took years. It took years because there was resistance on the part of the police department. I think there was generations of resentment among the members of the community, especially the African-American community in South and South Central Los Angeles. And it took us years to get over that. And ultimately, it took a consent decree to get the department to change the way we did business, the way we handled our use of force, and the way we interacted with the community.
We're talking with Andrew Smith, the police chief of Green Bay. We have Ben Bliven here, WASA's chief of police, and you with your question about community policing and where you see the relations going in the future. Your reaction to the George Floyd incident, 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Chief Bliven, how would you want your officers to handle a situation as you saw in George Floyd?
Well, you know, I think it's interesting that from my perspective, there's a lot of people questioning the tactic that Derek Chauvin used on George Floyd with his knee to the neck, and is that a trained tactic or not a trained tactic? My stance is I don't believe that matters because we have lots of training and tactics, and you know, whatever use of force an officer can use could be used inappropriately, and it could be excessive even if it's a trained technique. My opinion is that it's a heart issue, it's a character issue, it is a relationship with our community issue, and what are we doing in law enforcement to make sure that our police officers understand when force is appropriate and what communication and de-escalation tactics need to be put in place in a given incident, regardless of the use of force or trained tactic that we're using. It's a heart issue and a character issue, in my opinion.
How much of a focus do you put on the schooling of de-escalation? How much training do your officers get on de-escalation?
Well, we talk about de-escalation in our communication skills on a monthly basis, at least. We review every use of force that our officers are in. We keep a log, and we make sure that our officers are communicating well. But beyond that, we talk a lot about our core values: professionalism, accountability, integrity, and respect. And what do those mean? But what do those look like in action, and how are we treating people? And that's every single person that we come in contact with. And we live in our communities, and we have a vested interest in the quality of life here because we live here. Our kids go to school here in our communities. Our families live here. And so we need to make sure that if we're going to improve and enhance the quality of life in our communities, that our police officers are behaving in a way that supports that.
Chief Smith, when, if ever, is it appropriate for an officer to kneel on the neck of someone who's handcuffed?
Never. There's no reason to be kneeling on someone's neck. And if it did happen inadvertently, and when an officer was fighting for someone's life, I would expect them to remove their knee from that person's neck as quickly as they were able to. And I would expect the officers that are there to stop that incident, if they turned and observed what was going on, to stop that officer from doing what he's doing. That is not my expectations. That is my demand of our officers.
What kind of conversations have you had, Chief Smith, with your officers on your force? What are you talking about right now?
We're talking exactly about that use of force situation that occurred. I've not heard anybody in law enforcement, and I've got friends across the country in law enforcement, I've not heard anybody who thinks that went well, who thinks that was a good use of force, or who thinks that was an appropriate application of force on Mr. Floyd. Not a soul. So that's what I'm telling my officers, and I'm telling them to remember our policy of partner override, where if you see your partner, if you see another officer doing something like that, then you need to stop him and take over that situation and handle it to its conclusion, rather than allow that to just continue on for 8 or 9 minutes, which was just horrifying.
Chief Bliven, what have conversations been like inside your department with your officers? What are they saying and feeling right now?
Yeah, there's a lot of conversation within our department and within our community about what happened in Minneapolis and the travesty that occurred there. And there's conversations around use of force. There's conversations around you know, the peaceful protests, and we've had peaceful protests here in Wausau, and the concern for police lives in response to the riots, and there's a lot of concern from our staff around that, because like Chief Smith said, you know, this is made our job more difficult, certainly, and so we have to work even harder in our community to maintain the trust that we have and to further build that trust, and that's a big piece of the conversation that we're talking about.
Wausau Police Chief Ben Bliven and Green Bay Police Chief Andrew Smith, they're with us as we look at use of force, transparency on the force, the position that police chiefs are in the wake of George Floyd's death in police custody. What do you want to say about the protests against police brutality? Do police officers have too much discretion in using force? How much discretion should they have under law? How can police community relations be repaired? What is possible? Join in 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. The police chiefs are back in just a moment. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, it is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're talking about how leaders of police departments are speaking out about the use of force by the officers involved in the arrest of George Floyd, the black man who died after a white police officer pressed his knee into his neck for 8 minutes. How has the police chief responded in your town or city? Chiefs around Wisconsin, what are you saying to your officers? How do you attempt to rebuild trust following incidents like this? Time to talk, 800-642-1234. We have Green Bay Police Chief Andrew Smith and Wausau Police Chief Ben Bliven who stay with us. Let's take a call now. Mark is joining us from Black River Falls this morning. Hi, Mark.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay. I've been hearing all these things that the police chiefs are going to teach their officers. I haven't heard any one of them say, we're going to teach our officers to listen to that guy that they have pinned down on the ground who can barely talk, in this case, who can barely breathe, and in the end, he could not breathe. Why couldn't anybody listen to him? Don't they have ears? Do they have hearing problems?
Mark, thank you for the call. Chief Smith, can you feel that?
Yeah, you know, you're exactly right. And we do expect our officers, and that has been one of our conversations with our officers. When someone is in distress like that, when someone clearly has problems and they're handcuffed and in custody already, I see absolutely no reason why someone should be kneeling on a person's neck. And that's on the other officers that are there. I think it's incumbent upon them to pay attention to what's going on and respond to that person's cry for help, really.
Chief Bliven, what do the words say when a person is taken into custody if they are in distress? What do the officers do?
Yeah, well, first, I think it's important to remember that, our training for our staff here is that communication isn't just talking to somebody. It's a two-way street, right? Talking and listening, just like we're doing on this radio show. Communication is a two-way street, so we don't just tell people what to do. We communicate with them, and we listen to what they are saying. What are their, are they in distress? And, you know, so no matter the situation, anytime that we use force, it's a requirement that we check their ability to breathe and their medical status. Are they experiencing anything that we think is a medical issue, and get paramedics en route to our scene if they do, so that we can have them checked out at the hospital regardless of the level of use of force.
Well, let's go to another Mark now. Mark in Green Bay is joining us. Hi, Mark.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Yeah, my comment was for Chief Smith. I had the chance to listen to your spontaneous speech to the protesters over the weekend, the peaceful protesters. And I wondered if you could share with us kind of the value of, I heard anger from the events that happened in Minneapolis come out, but also a willingness to listen to the crowd and be approachable to them. And I wonder if you could speak to the value of that when we're trying to improve the community relationship with police officers.
Sure thing. You know, there was a lot of angry people in that crowd, and I felt anger myself, and I understand their anger. I went to the protest, and I was invited to walk along with the people that were protesting, listen to them as they would walk up to me and spontaneously tell me things, how they were feeling, what they thought of our police department, what they thought we could be doing better. And I thought it was important for me to stand out with that crowd when they came to the police station and listen to speaker after speaker talk about their experiences, talk about their reaction to the killing of Mr. Floyd, and talk about their reaction to what our Green Bay Police Department is doing. And I think that's important for all chiefs, not just the day that they're protesting, but I think chiefs really need to pay attention to the community from the moment they become chief. Listen to what the community says. Have those meetings. Sometimes they're painful to listen to. Sometimes they'll tell things about your officers that you don't want to hear. But it's important that you're there listening and responding to those concerns. And it starts the day you pin that badge on as the chief. And one thing I think we need to remember as part of this conversation is the chief is accountable for what the officers do. And the chief needs to hold those officers accountable for their actions. And without discipline, you can't have a well-ordered and successful and professional police department. And that's a painful part for a lot of chiefs to realize, I think, and a lot of police leaders to realize that they're responsible for the actions of their officers, and they need to hold their officers accountable. Time and time again across the country, we see officers that have a giant history of doing bad things, and the chief did not have the courage to punish them and remove them from their position as a police officer. And let's face it, there's cops across America that don't deserve to be cops. They give us all a bad name.
We're talking with Police Chief Andrew Smith from Green Bay and Police Chief Ben Bliven from Wausau, taking your calls. Let's go to Ian now in Milwaukee. Hi, Ian.
Hi, how are you doing?
All right. What is your question?
I was just going to say that the distrust with the police force has become more apparent now, because I believe that the police have become more militarized over the years, and they've gone from protecting and serving the public to basically disconnecting from the public. And I think there's a lot too much distrust from, you know, the public to the police and the police to the public. And that's just a comment, really.
And Ian, you live in Milwaukee. What is it like for you in terms of relations with community policing there?
It is very minimal. There is too much division. I understand the police have got a very tough job in the city of Milwaukee, and I wouldn't want their job at all. And I do feel for them. But I just feel that things are getting far worse, and now having the military on the streets could be a very dangerous place to go.
Ian, thank you. Chief Bliven, can you feel that first, that the police have become extremely militarized?
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks, Ian. I appreciate that comment. If any police department in our country isn't doing what they can to reach out to every segment of our community and our population and our local community, then they aren't doing their job. And it's as simple as that. I mean, persons of color have been telling us they're scared of police, and they're feeling oppressed for a long, long time, as long as I've been in law enforcement. So if we're not listening now, what will it take for law enforcement in our country to listen? Any chief in the country that hasn't had many conversations with persons of color in the last week isn't doing their job. And we need to be having these conversations and doing the outreach and doing the hard work of having those conversations. And that's our responsibility. And Chief Smith said it really, really well. I would say that it's our responsibility to start listening when we pin our badge on as a probationary officer. Everybody in our police department needs to believe that and do that from day number one.
Chief Smith, Green Bay was put under a curfew yesterday after the protests Sunday turned violent. You have 125 National Guard members around the city. What do you say to Ian when he says, look, the police have become extremely militarized?
You know, I have to agree with you, and I think the police have become militarized. You know, we have military vehicles that you see across the country. We have military-style weapons. We have officers that dress in military-style clothing. And we've all admired the military. You know, they do a heroic job for us. But a lot of times there's not a place for the military within a city. Here in Green Bay right now, temporarily, yes, we do have the military here, 125 National Guard soldiers. They're guarding our City Hall, they're guarding our courthouse, they're guarding our police station to allow our officers to go out into the field and do the work that they need to do. You know, on night before last, we had 60 officers surrounding the police station because we've seen police stations burn. We were told that the crowd was coming to try and wreck our police station. We're watching social media that says, you know, meet and gather and, you know, take on the police at the police station. So we had to have all of our officers out there. We couldn't be out in the community where we belong because we were all guarding the police station and some of the other critical facilities downtown. So they've taken over that job for us to allow our officers out in the field and allow them to do the job that we need them to do out in the field.
Do you have any sense how long they will be in your community?
I'm thinking they'll probably be there for a week. That's kind of the loose arrangement that we had made with them. And their job is to basically, you know, stand guard. There's a lot of facilities in downtown Green Bay. We've got 180 cops to cover 22 square miles and 24-hour-a-day coverage. It's not a lot of cops, and there's a lot of opportunity. We saw that happen the other night when they attacked the gas station and looted it, and shots were fired, and police cars were ruined. And cops had rocks thrown at them. We just didn't have enough officers out there to handle the other things that were going on, the fires that were being lit, the windows that were being smashed, and the stores that were being looted, things like that.
Chief Bliven, what are your thoughts on bringing up the National Guard and their role in this moment?
Well, like Chief Smith said, there are our communities, you know, in Wausau, we haven't experienced that type of violence, but Green Bay, Milwaukee, Madison, they are experiencing that. And, you know, our responsibility as law enforcement is the safety and the security of our community. And in times like this, we need additional resources to be able to provide for that safety and security in our communities. There's lots of peaceful protests going on in our communities. I will be part of them. I know Chief Smith has been part of them. Lots of law enforcement across our state are going to be part of them. But, you know, our role is also the safety and security of our communities, and that's a critical role for us to play.
Well, thank you both for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot.
Andrew Smith, Green Bay's police chief. Ben Bliven is Wausau's police chief. Coming up, we travel to Lake Geneva and explore how the popular tourist destination is staying safe during the pandemic. Do you live or work in Lake Geneva? How are you feeling after crowds flocked there for the Memorial Day weekend? Join in at 800-642-1234. We'll be back after this news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the morning show as we zoom in on Lake Geneva on the Illinois border. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Visitors to downtown Lake Geneva will not be required to wear protective face masks or maintain social distancing to combat the coronavirus pandemic. As the summer tourist season ramps up, its city council voted Thursday to reject a proposal that would have required people to wear masks whenever congestion prevented them from following the 6-foot social distancing guideline. So what do you think about large crowds visiting tourist areas in our state? Are you a business owner in Lake Geneva? How are you navigating summer tourists and the pandemic? Join in with your observations, your questions, 800-642-1234. Stephanie Klett is president and CEO of Visit Lake Geneva. She previously served as the Wisconsin Secretary of Tourism. Stephanie, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Kate, it's great to talk to you.
All right, so we saw those images over Memorial Day weekend, thousands of tourists visiting Lake Geneva and not much protection. What did you see and what were those conversations like afterward?
Well, that's a big question. That's a 30-minute show. So, you know what, I have to say, I'd like to tell you a little bit about what folks didn't see and then what they did see and what Lake Geneva is doing to deal with that. Thursday and Friday, we know that Memorial Day weekend is traditionally the kickoff to the summer tourism season. And what you didn't see are so many businesses doing it right and so many people and visitors doing it right. We have an office right across from Geneva Lake. It was two blocks away from the area that all the national news media outlets were broadcasting from. And it was overwhelming. People had been pent up and safer at home orders for a couple months. But on the Thursday and Friday of Memorial Day weekend, as people started to come in, it was awesome to see how many people were so safety conscious. They wore masks at every store. I went to five stores on Friday. Every single employee, owner, and visitor had a face mask on. They had sanitation stations everywhere. People respected social distancing. On Saturday and Sunday, that changed in spades. And I think it was as much of a shock for the community, for all these business owners that really did right, that spent money, time, preparation, planning to do it right. And so what you saw was Wrigley Drive with four restaurants that had outdoor dining and just nonstop people waiting in lines. So many of the visitors that were interviewed said, we've had enough. We can't take it anymore. We had to get out. And Lake Geneva really had a perfect storm because the weather was stunning for Thursday, Friday, Sunday, and Monday. And Saturday had some tornado touchdowns near the area. But in our area, minus a few minutes of rain, it was a beautiful day. So you have this kickoff to the busiest season when people usually put it on their calendars to get out. You had perfect weather, and you had overwhelming crowds in a very small area. Because, again, there are two things that folks didn't see that I think are important. Actually, several. But one, where my office is, right behind us is Flatiron Park. Every single family in that park was social distancing, and it was far more than 6 feet. And I was so touched by that. And this is on the worst day the crowdest day.
What should be the best day for a tourism director?
Yeah. And that's just it. There are a lot of mixed emotions. And whether it's George Floyd right now or it's bringing business and tourism back, it seems like today there are no simple answers. I think something the city learned from was something they did very right, and that was Riviera Beach. Riviera Beach holds 900 people. The harbor master, who's employed by the city of Lake Geneva, Linda Frame, said, okay, we've got a social distance, no more than 300. That's the maximum capacity for people to safely social distance, and we're going to monitor it. That was the big thing. So many people did the right thing, but they didn't have the enforcement of it. So at 10 o'clock when she opened the beach, by 10:30, they cut it off for the day. It was 300 people, and they had folks that were on the beach saying, be sure to spread out. You know, oh, watch it. And they did it in such a kind way. So those were the things that were done right.
Well, Stephanie, I want to pause here to take a call. Don is joining us from Lake Geneva. Hi, Don.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I'm a Lake Geneva business owner and homeowner, and the crowds, to say the least, were very upsetting. I did not witness a lot of social distancing, zero masks wearing, maybe one out of 30. I'm very proud of our city itself doing the stations, the masks, and taking precautions for the COVID. But my question is for city council and for the city itself, what are they going to do when Lake Geneva is a new hotspot coming up this fall or later this summer, potentially, with all of these unmasked people coming in? And our town is so sick that nothing can be open, and we don't have the medical care locally to take care of 8,000 sick local residents.
Steph?
Well, that's an excellent question, and I'm meeting with the mayor at 10:30 today. They had a city council meeting yesterday. Obviously, Walworth County Health is keeping tabs on, since Memorial Day was over a week ago, seeing who is getting the COVID virus. You know, are those numbers going up? And so they're giving it that 14-day window. And I know one of the things the mayor has asked me with me about is a mask campaign, because the businesses were doing it. But he brings up an extremely valid point, is that there is no uniformity in how the whole state is opening. And once the Supreme Court overturned Evers' decision, it was, okay, this county is doing this, this county is doing that, when whether it was federally or by the state, I think, you know, it kind of created the situation where everybody is doing what they think is best for their community. I'm sure the city felt a lot of heat because so many business owners said, and they were very vocal about it, if this goes on one more week, I will no longer have my business. They've borrowed on everything. Their employees, a lot of restaurants were feeding their employees. They had to let go of or furlough temporarily. And so, again, the issue was extremely complex. But one of the things we're talking about at 10:30 is a mass campaign, getting the word out there, because we do safety for to be considered. It's a call for people to take a considered approach when traveling. And we're going to be challenging our visitors to be compassionate and care for the health of others while supporting local businesses. So
Stephanie,
social distancing,
yeah,
mask, hygiene.
I want to jump in here. Don, how is your business doing right now? And what are you trying to do to keep it safe during COVID?
My business was hit in early February with zero business, basically through February and most of March. I had to lay off a couple of employees of mine in the industry that I work in. And we're an essential business with that. But the essential part of the business dried up in the state and in local areas that we service completely. So we've had to rely on the government paycheck protection loans, which weren't enough. They only lasted for just a small amount of time. We've put in for additional loans. We've used some of our credit. It's put us at the fringe of going under as well, like many, many, many other small businesses have been placed in. We do, we have to go out with some of the essential services, but, we wear masks, we wear protection, we're using hand sanitizers, that sort of thing as well. But it's very difficult, very, very difficult right now for everyone.
And finally, what would you suggest that Lake Geneva do here heading into such a prime tourist time? What action do you want Lake Geneva to take?
Well, I understand that it's a very complicated, and I understand that businesses need to, to keep themselves open. I would hate to see our downtown and our local businesses suffer financially. But the local people don't even visit the downtown much because of the concern. Everyone that I've spoken to has been avoiding downtown because the people that are coming into the city don't wear masks. They aren't necessarily social distancing. There's things like, they just trashed our town when they came in, basically. And I would like to see the city either put up some sort of signage that says the masks are required, or have some sort of ordinance like Illinois does, where they have to wear a mask in any business that they go into in our area. And I think that would do dramatic, protections for everyone that's involved, both the people visiting and all of our business owners here locally.
Well,
I think
Don,
just the simple thing is a mask would do great amount of benefit.
Well, Don, thank you for contributing your thoughts. Stephanie Klett, it sounds like Don is saying that, if there was a concerted effort to wear masks and you're looking at a campaign that would help. Have you noticed businesses having to close, though, because they can't make ends meet?
Yes, we've had a couple. A lot of them got very inventive. And they, I listened to your business segment earlier and about online business. And so they quickly navigated to online. Don brings up some interesting and good points. But one of the things that the downtown businesses say is that they're very rarely supported by local residents. And last week you did a show where I found it fascinating because Door County said the same thing, that you know, a lot of their residents, when visitors come in, the residents leave or they don't go, you know, to the downtown villages. And that brings up an interesting question as well, because then sometimes the downtown feels like, wow, we're not being supported by our own, and this is a visitor town. And so you notice that almost anywhere, whether it's Bayfield or Door County or places like Galena, is that folks that move to the area because they fell in love with it as a visitor, once they're there, say, gosh, I don't like all these visitors here.
Well, let's pause there with Stephanie Klett, CEO of Visit Lake Geneva, promoting tourism. We can hear from you, 800-642-1234. Back in a moment on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're spending time in Lake Geneva, where the city council is meeting later today on next steps to help contain the spread of the deadly virus in the height of the tourist season. How is your tourist town managing the pandemic and the influx of out-of-towners? Has your tourist community held meetings? What are businesses doing to figure out how to keep customers safe? Still time for you, 800-642-1234. Stephanie Klett is president and CEO of Visit Lake Geneva, and she stays with us. Let's take another call now. Chris is here from Adams. Hi, Chris.
Good morning. I live far enough away from the Dells not to have to go there, but close enough that it's a concern for the people in this town. We've been talking about it. The Dells opened last week, and I can't imagine the nightmare of trying to keep people safe in a water park. That's just beyond me. But I also wanted to say that the Dells is basically a ghost town in the wintertime. It completely shuts down. And they hire UW students in the summer and put them in on top of each other, party-hardy housing for the summer. And then the UW is talking about reopening this fall. And it just seems to me that this is a nightmare waiting to happen for our young people.
Chris, thank you for that call. Stephanie, what is staffing like when tourist season ramps up and younger people find jobs in your community?
Well, you know, Chris brings up a great point. Now, in Lake Geneva, we don't have, you know, Wisconsin Dells, the volume of visitors. And, you know, they have a lot of J-1 visas, a lot of students from all over the world there. And we don't have the student housing that the Dells has, because that really is one of the things that, you know, the CDC is talking about, whether it's in a nursing home or, you know, smaller confined spaces. And these are very nice places in the Dells that students have housing, but they are closer quarters. And Wisconsin Dells has been opening up a little bit at a time, but there will come a time when you reach that mass number. And then what do you do then? And so that, I think that's the big question everyone in the tourism community is asking, and there are so many mixed answers, and it's almost one of those things where you need to have the folks ready to enforce and say, enough, we can't, this, we're at maximum capacity for safety. You know, I like what Don said with the ordinance, but with Wisconsin Dells, with, you know, the amount of volume of visitors they deal with, you know, Lake Geneva, tourism is big business. You know, it is a $585 million industry, and that's in direct visitor spending. And think about that with, you know, 7,600 residents. In Wisconsin Dells, it's over $1 billion.
Wow.
And so the tourist community, the visitor community, we've been meeting with an organization called Destinations Wisconsin, and it's all the Convention and Visitors Bureaus and Chambers of Commerce to go over best practices. But the truth is, we don't know. And that's why Lake Geneva was so eye-opening, because it let us know, wow, this is what's coming at us. How do we regroup?
Well, let's look for a moment at vacation rentals. Homeowners can convert their properties to short-term rentals, and there's a city ordinance requiring a $2,000 yearly fee, but the city council may look at reducing that. What do you see there in terms of both the fee reduction and how you would approach vacation rentals in your community during COVID?
You know, that's a really good and interesting question. I know there's legislation that's going in front of here in Wisconsin, in Madison, because I really think that they need to set the precedents for that. They need to set the rule. That's a big one, and that's why a lot of folks aren't big into vacation rentals right now. With it, you know, and so it's going to be interesting. I don't have the answer to that question. I really don't. That's still pending certain legislation at the state level, and it's one that the Board of Directors of Visit Lake Geneva has been talking a lot about, because it's not just, you know, it's everything from the safety of the person staying there. You know, a lot of times there's that sense of safety because, wow, I've got my own home. Things are better here. It's safer here. But then you don't have the same standards. And so that's very mixed, and that's going in front of our legislature, and I look forward to what they say.
Stephanie Klett, President and CEO of Visit Lake Geneva. We're looking at how this tourist destination is preparing for the summer season amid the pandemic. With your questions, 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Tina now in Twin Lakes. Hi, Tina.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I was wondering, with the talk that you were just having about kids working in Lake Geneva, and my question is, what is happening, especially for like the Riviera Beach, where those kids are really close one-on-one with everybody coming from out of town? If anything is happening to compensate them, like additional essential pay for, you know, workers who have to deal with everybody from everywhere, you know, or what is actually happening for them, because they really are on the front lines. And I'm wondering how they're dealing with that with the beach.
That's a great question. I know Linda Frame has put in, and she, again, is the harbor master. She has a really thorough list of how they have to interact, whether that's social distancing. Of course, you know, with payment, you have to pay in advance. And so as least you can touch, the better. We know that being outside and social distance is a lot safer than being inside. In fact, National Public Radio did an incredible post last week about risk factors. So she would have, I don't have her exact list, but you know what, I'm going to bring that up today because I am meeting with many people from the city because I think that's a great question. But I know she was extremely thoughtful and had probably one of the most thorough plans out of everybody. But that is one thing that our business owners are doing if their employees are not comfortable. And whether that's just because they're scared of COVID, you know, they're young and they're a little freaked out, or that they have health issues, they are being really great saying when we, you know, see things as a little more time goes on, when you are comfortable, come back to us. And so there's a great understanding from the business owners side as well.
Tina, thank you. Let's go to Jane now in Menominee. Hi, Jane.
Hello. I have a suggestion that I've been thinking about. In our community, I would like to see a masked Monday. You know, right now they do the 7 to 9 a.m., you know, for seniors to come in and feel safe. I'm suggesting a whole day, because now seniors can go out to eat, they can go downtown, or anybody else that feels, you know, that they would like to be more cautious, and just take the whole day. And that might help getting some businesses in local communities, people to stay in their local communities if, in fact, they do feel safe.
Jane, I love that idea. I wrote it down. I love that idea because it was almost like what an earlier caller, Don, had said about, you know, us locals don't really want to go downtown, but you do a mask Monday. I think that's a brilliant idea. And I also think that that's an example of what it's going to take to get us out of this as we find our way in new territory.
Jane, thank you. Stephanie, before we have to let you go, you know, part of tourism is all the festivals and the concerts, the events, and we've seen those cancellations straight across the calendar. What plans are being made for events in Lake Geneva?
Well, you know what? I have to say, you know, last year, USA Today named Lake Geneva the number one small town for adventure. And yes, we have events. Some of them have been postponed, a couple of them canceled. But where we hang our hat
are outdoors. You know, everything from our 21-mile lakeshore path to the White River State Trail and bike riding to Bigfoot Beach State Park. We are really an outdoor destination, but our attractions are really what lure people in. So whether that's Safari Lake Geneva, who revamped their model, so when you're on this wildlife preserve, you stay in your car the whole time. They made that adaptation because of COVID, but it's been so successful, they're keeping this model. Lake Geneva Cruise Line has created pod seating. So, you know, for their cruises on Geneva Lake, you can either be outside or in pods of 2 to 4 that are social distance from each other. So the whole community has really transformed the visitor experience and how they're hosting them.
Stephanie, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Stephanie Klett is president and CEO of Visit Lake Geneva. Just ahead, we find out what the pandemic has taught us about the laws of supply and demand. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.